Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
They have gotten their props if it goes the other way. Like, that's the thing about Colorado. They're like the new Notre Dame. Everyone's either rooting for them or against them.
Russ Dellinger.
By the way, is Marcus Freeman and Sam Hartman the most handsome couple of coach and quarterback? I mean, really?
And SI's Pat Forte.
Like, I would love one time for Lane Kiffin to tiptoe up to a big game, to tiptoe up to the Alabama game, instead of like, I'm going to start every fight I possibly can publicly.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod presented by Invesco QQQ. We have got a huge weekend. I don't recall a September this exciting. Six games, ranked the ranked. Got number six, Ohio State at Notre Dame. Number nine, Notre Dame. Got number 15, Ole Miss at number 13, Alabama. We got number 22, UCLA at number 11, Utah. We've got the Tupac Bowl. Number 14, Oregon State at number 21, Washington State. Take that, Power Five. And we've got number 24, Iowa at, and I don't know what Penn State's ranked. What are they ranked, like eighth?
Seven.
Okay. Yep. Number seven. See my prep? I did all the way to, this is how I, this is.
Mm-hmm. You prepped like 13 out of 14 teams or 12 out of 11 out of 12.
11 out of 12. Yeah, 11 out of 12. It's an A. That's an A. It's in the 90s, right? 90-something percent.
90-something, and then you took the rest of the day off. Okay.
I got a little sloppy there at the end. Got to clean that up. We're going to get back. We're going to clean that up. That's what they all say.
Yeah.
Just a couple. Couple.
Watch the film. You know, watch the film.
We're clean
scout.
That up.
We're going to scout our scout.
Self-scout. We're going to take the bye week to self-scout. Try doing more than 5 minutes of prep. I was all proud of myself, too. That's not even, like, there's other massively intriguing games like, oh, FSU at Clemson.
Yeah.
Like, the entire Clemson empire on the line. Mel Tucker got fired, which we knew. We'll get to that. I do want to start to the games. We have a tremendous Lane Kiffin. Just, he's off full form. Full form. Coach Prime. We got it all. Well, this is what I want to start with. Notre Dame, Ohio State. Now, this is a game that everybody circled all offseason as potentially the best non-conference game, game everyone's excited for, all this stuff. Buckeyes showing up under the Golden Dome, prime time, the whole thing. And quite honestly, Notre Dame's had its moments of interest, a good victory against NC State. They played week zero. They look really good. Sam Hartman looks good. Buckeyes have been fighting through, you know, Kyle McCord becoming the starter, beating Devin Brown out. Did not look great against Indiana, then beat some weaker teams, Youngstown and Western Kentucky. But they've all, this thing's kind of snuck up on us because everyone's talking Colorado, everyone's talking SEC falling down, everyone's talking Pac-12. Here it is. Like, this is a massive game, and not just for, like, you know, who could potentially make the playoff or top 10 teams, but all sorts of subplots here. And I want to get to each team on it. And I want to start with Notre Dame, Pat. It's, to me, this is a absolute monster opportunity for Marcus Freeman. I thought Marcus Freeman was one of the most intriguing guys coming into the season because he can prove himself as the Notre Dame coach going forward and build off of that and presumably improve their recruiting, improve their talent level, all of that going forward. This is one of his three opportunities this year to have a huge victory. USC also, they also play USC, they also play Clemson. This seems a lot more attainable to me now than it did a month ago because Sam Hartman is so good. He is walking into this game with the better quarterback, and that isn't easy to do. It's hard to have better talent at many positions than Ohio State at any time. Generally speaking, Notre Dame has gotten to be a very, very good program. But when you put them up against those truly elites, they don't have it. Now they might because they have Sam Hartman and they have such an elite quarterback. Thoughts on where Notre Dame is talent-wise in this game and how big of a chance this is for Marcus Freeman. Anything else you want to talk about Irish? Then we'll get to Ohio State.
Yeah. Your thoughts dovetail with my thoughts. I think Notre Dame can win. And coming into the season, I would not have said that. Last year, I certainly didn't say it. And I thought Notre Dame did fairly well to lose by, I think, like 10 points. That Sam Hartman has been an absolute difference maker. He has given them really good balance. He's given them great, like, professionalism, frankly, at quarterback and maturity, but also in leadership, but great just offensive balance. They've got a really good power running back in Audric Estime. I don't know if they've got a scoot back, you know, somebody who can get out and break ankles in open space, but they can play power. They've got a good offensive line. They're strong, and their defense is good. It's been physical. They've been really disruptive in the passing game. They've got 5 interceptions, 6 sacks, 15 passes broken up, 23 quarterback hurries so far this year. So Kyle McCord had better be ready. But Notre Dame can get after the quarterback, can cover, and can do things on offense with both running and passing. So I love this setup for Notre Dame. We will see if they are good enough. But coming into the game, I like where they're sitting.
Well, you mentioned their defense, and that's been kind of overshadowed because of this story, as Dan said, around Sam Hartman, who, you know, been throwing, I think he's averaging around 275 yards passing a game, 13 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. And he's just kind of stole the show and kind of overshadowed Marcus Freeman's defense, has been incredible. 3 points, 24 points, 17 points is what they've allowed this year. 24 points NC State scored, I think, in the final couple minutes of the game. So that's what's going to – and that's what was surprising last year when they stayed in it with Ohio State, right? It was 21-10 was the final score there. Is defensively, they were really good, and they appear better this year. So I agree. Like, I mean, honestly, in a lot of ways, they should win this game. You know, they're at home. They seem to have the pieces to do it. I kind of expect them to win the game.
Wow. All right. We'll make picks later in the week. What would this victory, Ross, mean for Marcus Freeman?
Yeah. You know, I think the Notre Dame head football coaching job is probably the most pressurized maybe in college sports. You know, I visited Notre Dame, back in July and sat down with Marcus Freeman. You know, I don't know him really well and got to know him a little bit. He toured me around his newly renovated office, which has a ton of candy in it. And if you've seen Marcus Freeman, he doesn't look like a person who eats a lot of candy. So I was struck by that, but he said that the candy is for his many children. I think he has six kids. And he was telling me about that. He didn't seem pressured when I met with him. That was in July. And I wonder if it's because he knew he had a quarterback and a defense. Maybe he knew he had this team. But last year, I think last year was the single most up and down roller coaster of a college team's season that I've ever seen, like literally ever seen, right? To lose to a bad Stanford team, to lose at home to Marshall, and to go on the road and beat North Carolina, to beat Clemson, to take down BYU in Las Vegas. It was just up and down. And he certainly took some pressure. I remember talking to him about that in his office. He took some heat from the fans, but he seemed so relaxed, and maybe there's a reason for that. Maybe he knew he had a quarterback and that was the missing piece.
Dude, he's smooth. He's cool.
Yeah.
Look, if you're like 36 years old, you're making whatever the heck he's making, $4-6 million a year, and you look like that, you have got no worries.
By the way, is Marcus Freeman and Sam Hartman the most handsome couple of coach and quarterback? I mean, really?
That's a pretty good point. Reader poll, listener poll, we'll get on that one.
Best yeah. looking. I mean, I have an unblemished record of heterosexuality, but I can fully admit these are two handsome men. I mean, these are two handsome men.
The Sam Hartman's beard, man, and the hair.
They've started doing these. He either looks like a guy from like a 1970s cop show, more than I've seen him when it, like, he look kind of looks like Jesus in some ways, like with that beard. He just depends how dark the beard is. Like, the guy
goes
really
well at Notre Dame.
Touchdown,
well.
Hartman. Yeah.
Yeah. There we go.
They're going to, just in case they need a Heisman campaign better than Sam Heisman. We're trying. We're trying for you.
Yeah, right.
Poor just little have, Notre Dame. Get a little
touchdown
promotion.
Jesus, have him posing like Touchdown Jesus in front of Touchdown Jesus.
Non-superficial analysis, Pat. Do we have any for you?
No, I mean, I would say this. I think for Marcus Freeman, there is pressure and there is opportunity, both. But you don't just want to be the guy that was Brian Kelly's old assistant who got, quote unquote, handed a Cadillac job when they could have hired other people. You want to prove that you should be the Notre Dame coach. This is a huge opportunity to do so. As Ross said last year, very up and down. Some great wins, some very bad losses. Nobody came out of that year. We talked about it in the preseason on the pod. There was no definitive book necessarily on whether Marcus Freeman could be a successful head coach based on last year. There was good. There was bad. There was nothing that just made you make up your mind. We could be getting closer to making up our mind depending what happens on Saturday. I was up there too preseason. I actually wrote a column positing whether Marcus Freeman's too nice for this job. Because when I was there, he's like waving to the children of his assistant coaches who are at practice, and he knows all their names. Little two-year-old who's the son of the secondary coach and this and that. And then you come into his office and his entire monster family, six kids, is sitting around eating Chick-fil-A at his table. It's just this very cool family atmosphere. And then you're like, but wait a minute, Urban Meyer didn't do that, and he won three national championships. Nick Saban, I don't think, does that, and he's won seven. And so maybe you need to be more of a maniac. I don't know. I hope you don't, but
I think
we'll
Urban will tell you he was all about family when he wasn't doing Bible study with Aaron Hernandez. Wasn't that in? That's how I heard the story. All right, let's flip this on the other side of a guy who got handed the keys to the Cadillac and still hasn't quite won over everybody in Columbus, whether he should or should not. I will say this about Ryan Day. For a guy who gets, you know, they lost twice to Michigan. That's all they really care about. He almost won the national title. I mean, they were so close.
Yeah.
They were so close. The midnight kick ended it. But they were so close. This guy's an excellent football coach, but they lost twice to Michigan. His recruiting right now is off the charts. They are crushing it. This will be a massive recruiting weekend for Notre Dame, certainly. I believe they're going to have over 100 people in attendance. And it's also big for Ohio State because they go toe-to-toe on at least the five stars. They're going to, and you know, they're all there. So there's going to be a lot of recruits there. Ohio State's rolling in every single way except they haven't beat Michigan. And because of that, there's people. I feel like if Notre Dame loses, it will be far more accepted than if Ohio State loses this game. As a dangerous place to be for a coach when you really shouldn't be on any kind of hot. I'm not saying he's on a hot seat, like, officially, but when there's some kind of fan resentment and you're walking into another place and they've got a loaded spot and everyone's going, well, yeah, Notre Dame's good, but Ohio State, we should still win. Kind of a tough side. So what are the stakes here for Ryan Day, Pat?
Yeah, it's funny. Like in the 40-yard dash this week, I picked all the Big Seven games and I did a little subcategory. Which fan base freaks out harder if they lose? And I said, Ohio State is always the answer to that question unless Alabama is involved. Like, Ohio State fans freak out really hard if they lose. They expect to win every stinking game. That's a hard standard to live up to. That's why they loved Urban Meyer, because he damn near did it. I agree completely. Like, Ryan Day silenced any doubt I had in my mind in that college football playoff semifinal in a loss, because they played their ass off. They coached, they prepared, they executed. They did everything but win that game. And that, you know what, that was against a really, really good Georgia team. So don't tell me Ryan Day doesn't know what he's doing. That said, better win some games, better win this one, better beat Michigan at the end. So, you know, the beast needs to constantly be fed at Ohio State, and this is a big morsel you want to feed him.
Yeah, it's incredible that a coach who's 48-6, right? Won two conference titles, three division championships, and whose teams, every single team, has finished in the top five at the end of the season. All four of his seasons there is talked about as, you know, within the Ohio State community as not doing enough because of, basically because of two games, maybe three, maybe you could count, throw a playoff game in there that they should have won. And like Pat said, yeah, I mean that they should have won the that playoff game. You know, they played better. They prepared better. They coached better. I mean, they were better that day than Georgia, probably not a better team in general, and probably not more talented in that. In the end, I guess what came back to bite them. It's amazing that 48 wins and six losses, and we're talking about how this feels almost like a must win game. It's just the expectation there in old Seabus. You know, yeah. They like Pat said, expect to win every time.
You get that job, you got to win. I mean, look, Harbaugh was going great, and everyone was all over. He was the most overrated, overpaid coach in the country, right? Mm-hmm. Mocked and everything, and they were doing well. They just weren't beating Ohio State. I mean, that rivalry is unbelievable. This is going to be a great scene, great capper to a night. Although, who knows? There's probably something at 10 o'clock that's even. It'll keep this thing up. Again, this is lock in. You guys got to lock in this weekend. Lock in. All right, let's get to Colorado. Coach Prime and the crew headed to Oregon. 3-0. They are 21-point dogs, something like that. We'll get to the picks later in the week. Travis Hunter is out 3 to 4 weeks with a lacerated liver. Now, I have done some damage to my liver through the years. But I have never. I can't even imagine.
You beat me to the line there. I was going to say, I think we've all lacerated our livers in New Orleans.
We have not. Yeah, we have beaten it up, but not lacerated. He did like I never know what's going on with Colorado's social media and all their stuff is just so great. He was seemingly doing a talk show from his room, some kind of IG live. I don't even know where half these things are. There's just Travis. I'm just watching Travis Hunter in his dorm room, which was incredibly decorated.
Decorated. He has an interior decorator, obviously, huh?
I think he does. Yeah. Podcast lawyer Craig Mordock brought that to my attention. He was impressed. And I don't think Mordock knows too much about interior decorations. But Travis Hunt, we need to bring back that we should be college football cribs, right? MTV cribs.
Yeah.
Cause now the guys can do some stuff. Like they got money. Like Travis, I was like, I don't want to live in Travis Hunter's dorm. Like that's a nice looking spot right there. Like it looked like he put down fake flooring. It's like wood flooring. I don't even know. Heck of a spot. Anyway, he was just on there going, yeah, no big deal. Injuries are part of the game. I mean, this guy. Anyway, this is a tough game for Colorado. They did not get a pass rush. I don't want Bo Nix sitting back there with no pass rush. They got no pass rush against Colorado State. They have a lot of things. Hunter is two starters down. This is a very challenging game, but it's like the hype train is so big, people are going to go crazy if they lose, even though they have no earthly reason to think they should win this game, and no one ever thought so. But they have gotten their props. If it goes the other way, like that's the thing about Colorado. They're like the new Notre Dame. Everyone's either rooting for them or against them. They've taken over as Notre. This is like Notre Dame in the 60s or something like that, or 70s. Pat, your thoughts on where CU is going this weekend and our man Travis.
Let me firstly, I'll swerve just a minute to Travis and to the play that injured him and Jay Norvell and Henry Blackburn, the player who applied the hit for Colorado State. First of all, I mean, whatever abuse has come Henry Blackburn's way, his family's way via social media is ridiculous. It's awful. You know, people, not just death threats, but like putting all of his personal information and his family's information out on for the public. Like what purpose is that? What do you try other than to absolutely, you know, try to bully someone? I don't understand that. That said, I don't think Henry Blackburn should play football this weekend. No suspension. And Jay Norvell, I listened to his entire press conference yesterday. I thought his handling of this, I am unimpressed with Jay Norvell and Colorado State's approach to this whole thing. Jay Norvell said, it's a play that happens in football. I've seen it a lot. You know, I looked at the play. It's something that happens. He then kind of alluded, he's like, we don't teach that. We don't want to see anybody get hurt, you know. But he never came out and said, yeah, we shouldn't have done that. Henry shouldn't have done that. That was a bad play. And to kind of just kiss this off as that's the play that's happening in football, no, it doesn't. No. If it does, you should be ejected for it. You got a guy that's going to be out for three to four weeks because of that play, and it was not a necessary football play. That was ball hitting ground, player targeting defenseless player, and smashing him. So I would really have been perturbed, really, by Colorado State's response to that. Again, no room anywhere for fan abuse of Henry Blackburn, but I don't think there's room for that play in the game either. As for this game, Colorado's in trouble. I think they're in big, big trouble. Coming off a double OT rivalry game that ended after midnight, you're going to Eugene. You're playing in the toughest atmosphere in the Pac-12. You're playing a better team. Their strengths go at your weaknesses. Oregon can run the ball. Colorado cannot run the ball. I think this could be a steamrolling that kind of alters the dynamic of the Colorado phenomenon.
Yeah, going back to that play, you know, live, it didn't hit me live. And then, I see the replay, especially there's a replay of kind of over the top of the field where you see him coming in and you see the timing of everything and you see he's heading toward, right? Like there's intention there. And it's one of those plays where, if college football was kind of set up more like the NFL where you have a commissioner and all that stuff, you would probably have some kind of suspension, but obviously we haven't seen that or haven't seen that yet. But this game, which I'm going to be there for it, I'm excited. I've never been to Autzen Stadium, heard it's amazing. And they know that Dion's coming to town, undefeated Colorado, big talking and all that stuff. I'm imagining that the Oregon fans will be more than ready to welcome them in with hostility. So given that Travis Hunter's out, given how Colorado played against Colorado State and how Oregon has been playing, yeah, you could see why this is a 20-21 point spread.
Well, this is, how about being the 21-point home favorite? Mm. And Dan Lanning can walk around all week and be like, we're the underdog.
Yeah, everybody's coming to see Colorado. They don't care about you. Yeah.
This is the coach's dream come true and motivation, right? Oh, Coach Prime and the guys are coming. Nobody's talking about, a whole thing. And you're the better team. I watched Colorado Deion Sanders post-game thing, and he said, you know, this isn't us. We didn't play well enough against Colorado State. So as much as it looks like they're back now, they did have a concert in their locker room right after he said that. But, hey, you got to celebrate the wins. Say you won one game last year, you won three this year, you celebrate your wins. But, yeah, this is going to be a very challenging thing. And I agree. I would have liked to see the Mountain West or Colorado State do the right thing, Jay Norvell do the right thing and step up and say, look, we're going to suspend the guy for a week. That's not what we want to be known as. And I think between that hit and the late hit, late in the game against Shador Sanders, Colorado State, I get it. You're playing chippy. It's a rivalry game, all this stuff, but that's really not what you want to have your program known for. I wouldn't think. And that's what it is. I haven't seen the ratings yet, but that's easily going to be the most watched Colorado State game.
Oh, for years and years and years, probably ever. One other thing there that's Norvell, the whole, you know, he's backtracked on the whole sunglasses and hat thing. I was trying to talk to my players. Come on, man, all this stuff. They were penalized for 172 yards in that game. The most of any team this season, more than any team last season. Who knows how many years before that? These were some of the penalties, okay? Targeting, ejection, hitting Shador Sanders right in the mouth with the crown of your helmet. Chop block, dangerous play. Eliminated, they're trying to eliminate from the game because you're going after people's knees. Unsportsmanlike conduct, unsportsmanlike conduct, unsportsmanlike conduct. Block below the waist, dangerous play. Block below the waist, dangerous play. Block below the waist, dangerous play. Block below the waist. Like, that's the team you put on display out there, okay? You want to talk about a showcase for your team? You played like a dirty team, frankly.
Also, but just awful timing, right, for the Travis Hunter injury. Colorado plays right now two teams in the top 10 this season. Two teams who are currently ranked in the top 10. They're both in the next 2 weeks. Oregon at Oregon and USC at home, and they won't have Travis Hunter for either. And then what's crazy is the schedule considerably drops off, right? He had at Arizona State, against Stanford, potentially the two worst teams in the league, and then a bye week. It's too bad.
And honestly, if they could defeat Oregon, maybe even it doesn't matter, if they can play well, and they had Hunter, the whole thing, that Colorado-USC game could challenge to be – I don't think anything can – it's just generally speaking, nothing ever beats Ohio State-Michigan unless like Auburn, Alabama, because the audience builds across. That would be a 10 million plus game easy, USC, Colorado, and could challenge into maybe like 15 million people watching. And that, you know, Ohio State, Michigan, it's like 17. Like, it could be the biggest regular season game of the year, potentially. And so we lose that. So there's a lot of things to be kind of bothered by. We wish Travis was playing, but we're glad that he is resting up in a very comfortable dorm room, very stylish dorm room. We'll be right back after this message. All right, let's play a game here. Who's your defensive coordinator? It's kind of a random game. I never thought we'd be playing in the middle, particularly with Alabama. Lane Kiffin, we love you. I think Lane Kiffin was like, you know, everyone's talking about Colorado. Everyone's talking about Notre Dame. I got to make sure this Ole Miss Alabama game is focused on. Mm-hmm. And so sure enough, right out the gates, in his trolling best, I've got two unbelievable trolls here by Lane Kiffin. One of them involves Taylor Swift, and I'll get to that. But we're going to start right here. Sunday, Lane Kiffin does a Zoom call with his beat writers, and he just throws this little bit out that he believes that Travaris Robinson, is that it? Travaris Robinson?
Yeah.
Is actually, okay, the Alabama's defensive coordinator is Kevin Steele, who's been around for a long time. Didn't he make like $1 million coaching Tennessee for like 3 weeks and they didn't play a game?
It was like interim.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the interim, one of the great. Bring that up on Capitol Hill next time we hear Kevin Steele. He was the interim coach and made like $800,000 or something. It was something crazy. But you know, this we can't. Sam Hartman. It's bad if Sam Hartman transfers. It's terrible. Guardrails. Anyway, we had too much to do with the deal with that. Kiffin, so Kevin Steele is the defensive coordinator, but Kiffin just throws out there that he thinks Robinson is actually calling the plays. And I don't know what he's somewhere on the defensive staff. He just throws this out there. We've been against Kevin a number of times, worked with him at Alabama, then played against him at Auburn and LSU. But it seems like there's been a change there. I don't know what happened after the Texas game, but you know, our guys watching the TV copy schematical in the last game, it certainly seemed like T-Rob's now calling the defense. We played him before at South Carolina, so we're preparing accordingly, you know, for him calling the defense. He's done a good job too, and they've got really good players. He throws the little compliment in. So Lane Kiffin just suggests that Nick Saban has secretly demoted his defensive coordinator and promoted someone else without announcing it. So this, of course, gets to Tuscaloosa, and Saban is not pleased. Doesn't even wait for a question as he talks. On this other thing I hear floating around out there, that's just Saban. I mean, so good. Yeah. I'm sure you've seen the same reports that I have. is that Kevin Steele is the defensive coordinator, Saban said. He has all the defensive coordinator responsibilities. The only thing that we tried to improve on from an administrative standpoint was game day administration of getting the signals in quicker. All right. When he throws that all right in there.
Yeah.
That's his tell. There's a little. All right.
Yeah.
What do you want me to do? Bench him? All right. I can't do a good West Virginia accent. I need to drink more of that beer. So that's the only, he goes on. But he comes right back on it. Okay, great. Saban tries to squash it. Here comes Lane. He's back. Lane has a press conference after Kiffin. I mean, we're only on Monday. This is a Monday thing. Kiffin's like, why did you think that they switched defense? I was asked the question, Kiffin says. Oh, of course. Just innocent old Lane. Yeah. What's it like going against Steele's defense? I wasn't trying to start this big thing. Yes, you were. Yes, you were.
Absolutely, but I love it.
Right? Eddie Haskell, the old Eddie Haskell thing. We saw things on TV copy just where it was different. First off, what the play looked like, the calls and stuff. And then this is where it gets interesting. So it could die there. And so we looked into that further. And it ain't no secret that people in these buildings know each other. So obviously, we obviously got some information that way, too. So he suggests someone in Tuscaloosa is telling someone in Oxford that they switched defensive coordinators. Now, two things are happening. One, they are culling. There's a phone cull right now of every assistant coach in Alabama to find out who the leaker is. Loose lips sink ships, fellas.
There is a rat in your unit. That is a fact.
Two, Saban is assembling a firing squad who will line up whoever this leaker is. And they could get gunned down right by the Denny Chimes. And it would be ruled justifiable homicide at the Tuscaloosa City Court.
I think they'd actually just go with a public stoning and give every fan a chance to throw an actual stone at whoever it is.
Okay, before we get to the next Lane Kiffin troll job, thoughts on this one, Ross?
Just masterful troll job. It's just incredible. Masterful troll job. I envision Nick Saban, who, not on Twitter, I don't think scans Twitter, being informed about this on Sunday night. Analyst, assistant coach, sports information director, whoever has to call Coach Saban, then say, "Coach, Lane done did it again." Right? And you can
that's a bad job. How about being the guy that's got to bring that news? Oh, God.
Yeah. Just incredible.
Godfather wants to hear the bad news immediately, right? Yeah. Is a horse head going to show up in someone's bed? I don't know. Pat?
Oh, this is fantastic. The one thing, my question is, Lane just does this. I'm sure it's calculated, but is there some of it where he can't help himself? I would love one time for Lane Kiffin to tiptoe up to a big game, to tiptoe up to the Alabama game, instead of I'm going to start every fight I possibly can publicly during the week. Can you just one time try it the other way? Because it hadn't worked kicking every fight, he is not beaten. Nick Saban. We've seen two of Saban's former assistants beat him now, Kirby and Sark. He has a chance to be the third. I think they can win this game, but good Lord, can you just once be quiet going in the game? From a media standpoint, bring it on, baby. But from a program standpoint, if they could just try sneaking up one time.
What I love is Kiffin, he's part of the Nick Saban coaching tree and in the family and all that, and he acts like they're all great friends. Nick Saban fired him in the middle of the playoffs.
Yes. Yeah.
Remember? What year was that?
Before the national championship game, 2017?
2016, right? 16? 16. I think they beat Washington and played like crap offensively. And he's like, all right, we're done with Lane. Because Lane's already leaving. He was going to
Florida. Right, he was spending so much time on FIU.
Yeah.
Or FAU.
And then they lost the game. Sark took over. Yeah, he got fired in the middle of the playoffs. I don't even think Belichick would pull that. So I think this is, he's just like, you know what? I love coach. He's going to try to get all of the, hey, I'm a former Saban assistant for all that clout. But there's still a little something there from that. So he's going to bet. This, what's great about this is all the controversy at Alabama is over who the quarterback is. Jalen Milroe is now back in the starting lineup per Saban. And I think now Saban likes this because he can sit there and point to the fans and say, hey, shut up with your booing. You saw the alternative.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. But instead of going after the QBs, he goes and now throws a grenade into the defensive room. And now it's like, well, maybe Saban wants to, like, did they, this is so good. All right. Troll job number two.
Swifty.
Taylor Swift has entered the chat. Tuesday morning, Lane retweets some concert footage of Taylor Swift singing a song. And the song is called Castles Crumbling.
Okay.
Now, as the resident Swifty here, although barely, I did not know this song. Which means I'm not. Really
I'm not sure you have real street cred as a Swiftie, but
I got teenage daughters. So yeah, Taylor Swift plays 24 hours a day in my house if Olivia Rodrigo isn't playing or somebody else. So I got more than you two, but I did not know the song. Let me. Now we wanted to play the music, but Sean informed us that replaying a Taylor Swift song in here would crush the budget. Since we don't have one,
yeah, we're too cheap for that.
So, unfortunately, you're not going to get the musical stylings of Taylor. You're getting me reading it, but you know, deal with it. Listen to these lyrics. This is what just randomly Lane Kiffin thought, you know, I thought that my Twitter followers would love to hear some Taylor Swift this morning. Let me just pick of all the many, many songs that she has in her various eras. I'm going to send out this one with these lyrics. Once I had an empire.
Oh.
Once I had an empire. Once I had, it says three times better than me. Once I had an empire in a golden age. I was held up so high. I used to be great. They used to cheer when they saw my face. Now I fear I have fallen from grace.
Oh.
And I feel like my castle's crumbling down. I watch all my bridges burn to the ground. And you don't want to know me. I will just let you down. You don't want to know me now. Once I had I was a great hope for a dynasty. Crowds would hang on my words and they trusted me. Their faith was strong, but I pushed it too far. I held that grudge. Till it tore me apart. And it goes on like that. Wait. Oh, this actually gets even better. Power went to my head and I couldn't stop. Ones I loved tried to help, so I ran them off. And here I sit alone behind walls of regret, falling down like promises that I never kept. Mm-hmm. And it goes on. Because you know when Taylor's digging in, man. That is the most aggressive trash talk. Are you kidding, Lane Kiffin? Did you just do that?
The funny thing, like, Kiffin has been the guy the last several years. Like, he's gone out to find, pointed out, like, for it's like Feinbaum keeps saying that Saban's done and he shouldn't say that. He's wrong. Now he's the one basically using the passive aggressive Taylor Swift song to say it. Very
maybe
salty.
He's just a. Maybe he's just a huge Swifty, guys. Come on. He didn't mean anything by it.
Maybe, and that was just the song in the rotation this morning.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Okay. I'm sure, I don't know if he is a Swifty, but his daughter, I mean, she is a Swifty age, I guess you could say, right? She's a freshman in college, so I'm sure she's a Swifty fan. So
I can assure you that there is not anyone with a teenager currently has heard every Taylor. Like, it's inescapable. It's like white noise. It's very good. It's very good. Man. Slightly more successful career than mine. I said best writer I've ever seen. But this is unbelievable. Like someone's now got to go to Saban and explain Taylor Swift lyrics.
explain Taylor Swift, period. He might not even know who she is.
Whoever that is in Alabama, they're probably like the associate athletic director of bad news. Josh Maxson, yeah. I am sorry if you have to go in. This guy deserves a raise. Whoever it is, man or woman, that has to draws the short straw and go, coach, we got another Lane's he's fussing up again over
Lane did there's it again.
Taylor Swift, and he's probably like, who's Taylor Swift? Like, does he even know who Taylor Swift is? I would think maybe. What do you think the odds are Saban knows who Taylor Swift is? Pretty good.
I would think that he does. Level of he's fame. Got a daughter too, not that young, but he's got a daughter too. I bet he does.
There's this song and
50-50, you know.
I mean, these lyrics are mean.
You think somebody read the lyrics to Coach Saban?
No.
Play this scenario out. If you are Josh Maxson and you are the assistant AD in charge of bad news, which is a hell of a job, but you've already gone into Saban or called him on Sunday and told him this, and then, all right, now it's Tuesday, and, you know, Saban's in his office, and he's got film on. He's clicking back and forth between, you know, a Mississippi offensive set or whatever, and you're going to knock on the door and interrupt that, and Saban's going to look at you with that look like, what the F do you want? And you're like, well, coach, it's a little bit complicated, but Lane is subtweeting at you about Taylor Swift and a song called Castles Crumbling. I would just love to be the guy that walks in and A, has to say it, B, explain it, and then C, get the hell out as fast as you can.
My foes and friends, watch my reign end. I don't know how it could have ended this way. Smoke billows from my ships in the harbor. People look at me like I'm a monster. Now they're screaming at the palace front gates, used to chant my name. Now they're screaming that they hate me, never wanted you to hate me. I encourage everyone to listen because I'm sure the dramatic reading of Castles Crumbling is not very good.
Yeah, we need the song. I mean, Dan's over
we
here.
We can't afford it. Come on, man.
We get an NIL deal and get the song.
We haven't had a Wetzel dramatic lyric reading in a while. So.
I can't. I mean, Taylor, don't you have enough? You can let a little old podcast. She went to a Notre Dame game once. Remember that?
Did she?
Yeah. her and what's the other one? The other famous who's like an actor singer.
What's the other one?
Selena Gomez. I think her and Selena, really? They did. Wow. Yeah, like someone's brother went to the school and they just showed up and then the school had to like get them out of the stands, get them to the sidelines. It was like crazy.
I am a Selena Gomez fan. Only Murders in the Building. Great show.
Great show. All right. I'm going to look that up while we do this. I don't know. This is, I'll find that one. Anyway, Lane Kiffin. I don't know if you can clap on here, but good work. Thank you. Thank you, Lane. My man.
Delivering
coming through
content.
For the pod. Coming through for the pod. All right. It's just so many games. We can't go through all the big games. The other one to me that's huge, FSU at Clemson. This is the chance for Mike Norvell and the Seminoles to knock Clemson down. I don't know about out. For years and years and years, Clemson was chasing Florida State. They finally got past them, and William Christopher Sweeney said, look, well, if we can beat Florida State, we can beat anyone. They used it as that rabbit they're chasing, the marker, and once they got there, they felt they could do anything. This is the reverse. Seminoles are back. How big is this game, Ross?
Yeah, I love, and we, you know, the focus of this weekend a lot is on Ohio State, Notre Dame, as we led the show with, in Colorado, Oregon. But to me, the two most fascinating games are Clemson, Florida State, and Alabama, Ole Miss. You have, you know, arguably two of the most dominant football programs the last, you know, 8 years or so, Alabama and Clemson in college football. And they're both seem to, over the last couple years, be in decline. I mean, that's what it seems to have happened. And they already have a loss this year, each of them, and they are hosting a, you know, top 15, top 10 team with, and these games just feel so big. The question of are their dynasties over kind of thing. Is their reign in college football over? It almost feels like the answer is going to boil down to these games. It just does. And it's fascinating. And the one in Clemson, the Noles have had good spots and bad spots this year. They didn't look great at times against Boston College. They looked really good against LSU. They're obviously very talented, and Mike Norvell has built the program up to, you know, levels of competing for a championship, but they do seem inconsistent. And they're playing, you know, at little old Clemson, and it's still Clemson. It's still going to be rowdy. They still have a lot of talent. It's really intriguing. These two matchups, the powers of college football the last 5 to 7 years, I can't wait to see kind of what these results are going to be.
Yeah, playing at home with, I'm sure, will be desperately intense fans and fan bases there. Clemson is walking a line like the 2021 team, which really kind of broke their run, where they lost the opener to Georgia, flutzed around against two teams that they should obviously have beaten, and then played North Carolina State and lost that game too, and they were out of the playoff race in September, and it was like stunning. This team will be out of the playoff race if they lose this game in September here after having been beaten by Duke in the opener. Boy, Clemson's got a major wide receiver injury. Cade Klubnik played better against Florida Atlantic. He didn't turn the ball over, he had just made some really bad decisions in the first couple of games and in last year in the bowl game too. So maybe he's starting to hit a little bit of maturity there. I think Florida State is frankly a better team. Can they take it on the road? Can they go in there and show it when the chips are down? That's going to be the big question. But yeah, if you're Clemson, man, I think Dan alluded to it. You are trying to keep the empire upright at this point. You don't want those castles crumbling on you.
And other than that, nothing at stake in those games.
Yeah.
All right. We've got a million big games. We'll get to more later in the week. Like I said, for us to skip like three rank, like UCLA, Utah is going to be wild. I don't know. So much going on. Anyway, quick update. Taylor Swift and Selena Gomez were at a football game.
Wow, where? Notre Dame?
Brian Kelly's debut, Notre Dame defeated Purdue 23-12. This was in 2010.
Wow.
Taylor's younger brother, Austin, or brother, I don't know if it's older or younger. Taylor's not that old. Austin was a freshman at Notre Dame. So she goes to visit her brother, brings Selena Gomez with her. They try to stand in the student section. Needless to say, not a great idea. The place goes bananas. So they have to get them sideline passes. They kind of like rescued them out of the student. I don't know if they were going to get killed, but whatever. This would cause some excitement. And they got them on the sideline. There's all these pictures of those two wearing gear, Notre Dame gear, which they should be promoting like crazy.
Yeah.
Brian Kelly, after the game, claimed that he listens to Taylor Swift on his iPod. A, dated reference, but B, no way.
No,
I don't believe
especially
it.
Especially in 2010. Like, I didn't even know that Selena Gomez and Taylor Swift were a thing in 2010. So that's,
I think they were a big deal then too, but yeah, I do not believe Brian Kelly in that. Good politician. Oh, yeah. Right. I listen to Taylor. Someone's like, there's Taylor Swift. What? They're big stars. Okay. Big fan. Anyway, yeah, so they were there.
You run that name by Brian Kelly then in 2010. Taylor Swift, what, 4-star wideout from Winnetka? Are we recruiting him? You know, he doesn't know.
I covered a Patriots. I was up with the Patriots. It was a midweek game. It was like a Bill Belichick press conference. And sometimes they hold their press conference up in the press box at Gillette Stadium. And so you look out and they couldn't practice on their field because Taylor Swift had rented the stadium for some concerts. And I think there was a road game. I don't know, whatever they were doing. I remember Bill Belichick being like, we've got Taylor Swift here, so we can't practice on our field. And he goes, she's a big deal. I remember being like, okay, we're doing great here. sold out the stadium three nights in a row about me. Anyway, so I don't know if Brian Kelly knows. Anyway, enough with Taylor Swift. There's a lot of can we get the Swifties to listen? Because she's got a lot of fans.
Yeah, hey, like, we that are would help our
number,
listenership.
We're going to be the number one podcast in America. Joe Rogan, backseat buddy. That's we got right. a lot of Taylor. We get in on the Swiftie message boards or something.
Please, Swiftie tap TikTok. Us in, man. Tap us in.
Quickly on Mel Tucker. He's gone. They're working out the logistics. Will he get any money? Will he not? Most people think he will. Tom Mars, noted college football attorney, says Mel will lose his lawsuit.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And get zero. I don't know. I feel like they're going to pay him to shut up, but we'll see. Any thoughts? We've gone through this. If you want to listen to who we think will get the Michigan State job and go back, but any new thoughts on this, Pat?
Well, I was a little bit surprised by the timing of this, and they said they have documented areas in which he has breached his contract. Is this simply relations with someone who was a Michigan State vendor who was hired by the school to do work? Is there something more? You know, that I guess maybe just my own assumption was this was going to play out through this hearing that's October 5th and 6th, and then decisions would be made, but Michigan State's fast forwarding here. Did they find other things, other issues with Mel Tucker where they went ahead and did this? Tangentially, Michigan State now is first to fire. They win the first to fire sweepstakes, which nobody saw coming until like 2 weeks ago. And so they jump into the job market first. So we'll see where they go with that. But I wonder, first of all, I mean, from the big picture standpoint, what a wild, precipitous fall for Mel Tucker. Secondly, yeah, does he get paid out of this? How big is the hit for Michigan State? But then third, what changed between, I don't know what it was, 10 days ago and now?
Ross had to leave. He had an appointment. I think he's like hanging out with Ted Cruz and like senators.
Joe Manchin, yeah.
Ross is so big time. He's just big time.
He's a beltway kind of guy.
Yeah. Oh my God.
We're more of belt loop kind of guys.
All right. Well, we'll end with this. Deep Gator sent us this. We'll do a two-man people's court. We'll put Sean, you could be in the people's court for this.
Sure.
A man in Florida is accused of stealing a large construction excavator. Those are the ones with the big, like, digging bucket on the front. Taking it for a drive, knocking down power poles before plowing through the front of a Walmart in Gainesville. This was not Billy Napier celebrating the victory over Tennessee. Although that'd be kind of a fun way to celebrate, wouldn't it?
Just go rampant in an excavator. I mean,
kind of fun, right? If you were allowed, like they had a park where you could just drive heavy equipment into buildings. I think I'd do that.
A park.
I mean, don't do it there. I mean, there's people at the Walmart.
Well, yes, shopping. No, yeah. This is more of an Aaron Hernandez sort of victory celebration. Yes,
yeah, the Southwest 42nd Street Walmart does not need an excavator gramming through it. 47-year-old Jesse Charles Smith hotwired the excavator and stole it from a nearby storage area. He damaged other storage units, a Starbucks, and then the Walmart during the joyride. Total damages to the Walmart near $2 million. And then they just throw this in. Police said Smith was also armed with a machete. It's not known why Smith stole the excavator. But in a real plot twist that we didn't see coming, Smith admitted to detectives he was on drugs.
Yeah. Shocking development there.
Penalty? Do we have a penalty, Pat?
Well, a couple of thoughts here, first of all. like the dude hotwired this thing. So I'm impressed with his electrical knowledge or whatever. I don't know how to hotwire. I couldn't hotwire a toaster. I don't know how to hotwire anything. He hotwired an excavator. Yeah. So that impressed me. And then busted it out of wherever it was. And then went after the Walmart. And look, I can understand having a grievance with, you know, big corporate Walmart. You're tired of the corporate giant. You want to go and just take them out. So I understand, you know, it's unfortunate if there were people in the Walmart who were under attack at that point, but it is a perfect Florida man detail that he had a machete because there are more machetes per capita in Florida than anywhere other than like the Sumatran jungle. You just hear every Florida man story seems like it's got a machete involved at some point.
Excellent point. Yeah.
In addition to the drugs. But I'm going to go lenient on him because I am impressed with his ability to hotwire an excavator and then to attack Walmart.
Yeah. Sean?
Yeah, this is interesting because he already had all the fun of getting to drive the excavator. So I don't think he's got a ton of regret. I think he should be on cleanup duty for the Walmarts and Starbucks and all the damage. And that's just picking it up debris and putting it in bags. And then the real punishment there is watching all the other people on the crew get to have fun and work the machines and have have the real jobs.
Kind of so manual labor.
Him knowing that he's not allowed to drive the excavator and live out his dreams will be punishment enough.
Live out his dreams.
He definitely has skills. That's the thing.
I'd go
lenient. Although go Gators. I mean, I feel like this is the sign that the Gators are back.
Absolutely.
When is Florida at its best? When it's winning games and madcap crime sprees are happening.
That's right. Yeah.
These are the Swamp Kings.
Gainesville's on edge. Yes. Gainesville on edge.
You beat the Vols and you get an excavator and drive it through a Walmart to celebrate. That is my idea of what Florida football is all about. I think all of the Gator fans should do a little GoFundMe, get this guy out, maybe get him a little rehab. Let's stay off the drugs. Machete, a little worried, but let's get this guy on a core crew. I'm sure they're building something down there in Gainesville.
Yeah, he looks like he wants to work.
Let's not just throw away the key here.
Yeah. We're all about rehabilitation here on the
That's really box. Is. Look out. This might be a sign. If UF beats, but I will say this. We need surveillance on him during the cocktail party because if Florida beats Georgia, what happens?
Yeah, right.
This guy, maybe you lock him up for that weekend. He has to serve like a 48-hour jail term. Put him away for the cocktail party so we know where he's at.
I suspect he'll already be in lockup, but that's what you got to be concerned that he can break out. If the dude can hotwire an excavator, he can do a lot.
Also true. All right. We'll be back later in the week with our picks, more discussion of more games. We'll see what the hell Lane Kiffin's doing. Appreciate everybody listening to this absurd podcast. It's probably not like any other college football podcast you would listen to. I can't even imagine the topics we wound up on today. That we were not expecting. But
the dive on Taylor Swift lyrics. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Appreciate it. Thanks for subscribing, giving us nice reviews, mostly telling your friends about us and encouraging people to listen. You are our membership committee. You're all we got. So no castles crumbling here. We will talk to you later.